Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You're very welcome along to the Tommy and Hector podcast with Loretta Blewett. I had an interesting experience during the week that I want to share with you now.
Oh.
I was in a country bar, where they mainly talk Irish. And I was talking to the barman, and he is from the eastern side of the island, of Ireland. And he wouldn't have great Irish. And the same few lads are drinking in the bar every day, you know. And I said to him, they're speaking Irish the whole time, yeah. And I said, what do they be talking about? Like, and he says, well, I wouldn't have great Irish, but it's the same kind of stuff every day. They talk about cattle. They talk about how many people are passing through the village, and they talk about the weather. That's all they do. And it's the same stuff over and over and over again. And I was just thinking that, you know, when you're doing that, you're talking about the same stuff all the time. It's kind of a limited type of conversation. It's familiar and it's comfortable, but it's kind of limited. And I started thinking about them boys, and I said, now, what would their conversations be like if they were able to bring up, like, metaphysical subjects? Like, if they were able to talk about deep psychological and spiritual issues in the same way they talk about cattle and strangers in the village. And I was just wondering, like, if one of them said to the other, what do you make of the story of the loaves and the fishes? Like, what do you think that's over a pint of Guinness? What do you think that's actually about? And I think those things are great, you know, but we don't do that because it's almost seen as bad manners. But I wanted to ask ye, now that this is kind of a replica of people in a bar having the same types of conversations, like, what do ye think the story of the loaves and the fishes is about?
The Lord save us and bless us. Such a way to start. I'm not really sure, to be honest. I'd rather sit with the lads in the bar talking about the weather.
Well, you know the story of the loaves and fishes.
Yeah.
Right, so that they're up on the mountain and the apostles were saying there's too many people, we can't feed them.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus said, well, sure, what's handy? And they said, well, there's two mackerel and there's
bread.
There's five loaves of bread, but there's the guts of 5,000 people out there. And Jesus says, no problem. Just start handing stuff out. And they handed the stuff out and every one of the 5,000 got fed and there was stuff left over.
Do you think they caught more fish or did they just use the two mackerel?
Well, I'm asking you, like, you know.
No, I reckon that.
But do you think that story is in any way interesting?
No. It's too highbrow for me, to be honest.
I like the start of the story when you're on about the Aran Islands and a few lads talking about the weather.
No, I don't mean, is the story I told you interesting? Yeah, I'm asking you, is the story of the loaves and the fishing is interesting?
Well, no, it wouldn't be. It's not going to be interesting if you're in an island and you're talking about loaves and fishes, because the boys don't want to talk about fishing on the island because they're fishing all the time.
No, you're not understanding me. I'm talking about
the boys are fishermen. They're fishermen. There's no need. And mackerel come in August in the Aran Islands. There's millions of them.
No, but do you think the loaves...
It wouldn't work on Inishman or Inishear or Inishmore because there's millions of mackerel there. You could feed the whole country on mackerel for the month of September.
You're not understanding what I'm trying to say to you.
I know, but the loaves and the fishes, yeah, but
it's
look.
It's not interesting.
What you're trying to say, Tommy, is that what you're looking to say, are you looking at, is it something that's inside us where we want to feed?
what are you talking about? I'm caught in the...
I like the start of that story.
Yes. And I, do you know why...
I was in a bar and I texted him on that morning last week when I knew he was out there. And I said to him, go down now to the pub at 11 in the morning
the reserve
and have
food.
Six quick pints of Guinness because it'll bend the roads on your walk home. It'll make everything softer.
The walls will be softer on the way home.
And you did, didn't you?
But you have... I've see, there's a bit of give in Hector. Hector is at least...
What?
There's no giving a mail at all.
I want to go on.
There's
go
no
on.
Giving
Hector is at least willing to approach the subject. He mightn't want go very far with it.
To grasp it.
But you have just a complete blanket. I'm not even thinking about that.
No, because it's too much. It's too deep. If you're having a pint, you don't want to be talking about the loaves and the fishes.
No, but I'm you now, never mind men having a pint. But you now, do you have no interest in the loaves and the fishes?
Well, it either happened or it didn't happen. And I mean, there's no point in discussing it now. Like, that was about 5,000 years ago or more, was it?
Puff on the side
more.
Of
it. More? What do you mean more? What? It's 2021.
Yeah.
Or 2020.
When was it?
Bad old year.
What do you mean, when was it? Look, the reason we live with the Christian calendar, AD, Anno Domini. What is it?
After death.
After death.
Before Jesus and after Jesus.
Yeah, AD, BC.
Or God or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
Go on.
I'm not surprised the Virgin Mary appeared in Knock in County Mayo to put some manners on you, the strapes of Mayo.
Well, like what
do you make of the crucifixion and the resurrection? What do you make
about losing the audience? Like, what are you? I think it was great. Well done.
Well, let's get down to the crux of the matter.
I wouldn't have liked to have been himself having to have vinegar on a sponge.
No, but I'm just. I guess trying to introduce these topics into everyday conversation. So if I say I got into a taxi in Dublin and I said to a fellow, could you bring me out to Donnybrook? And he's like, no problem, Tom, no problem. And I just turned to him and I says, what do you reckon that the whole story of Jesus walking on the water is actually about?
He put the radio on and
I think
he wouldn't
I think people out there, we don't expand the conversation that we should have. There are geniuses out there just waiting to talk.
So now Hector's mam worked in the
my mother,
the gift shop in the church.
The parochial bookshop.
The
parish bookshop, Tommy. It wasn't a gift shop. It wasn't Bunratty.
What?
It's not Bunratty, Tommy. It's not the Cliffs of Moher.
A replica of the church.
It was a gift shop. Euro. She wasn't selling scarves and pottery.
No, but she was selling
books.
Crucifixes and rings and
yes,
books. And
she ran...
A Christian gift shop.
She ran the parochial bookshop in St. Mary's. And a very successful venture it was too.
So, would she ever come home and say, I was reading a book today... By I read the spiritual confessions of Saint Augustine, and what do you think of that?
She read the book. You know, she read the book. There was only one book she read, and she read the book.
Right,
she read the book inside out.
From back cover,
Children in the Attic. It was called about these kids who were trapped in an attic.
Childcraft books. She read the book. She was a fair
at home. She ever read it at home?
Oh, she was a fair reader of the Bible and a fair believer in the Bible and a fair. She would take bits of the Bible and write it down on bits of piece of paper and
leave it under your door.
Yeah, people
put them around the house. And I found my mum passed away, I found a lot of them, and I found a few little bits of paper in different books and different places where I think she knew I'd find them or somebody would find them, and I've taken them with me to Galway and I have them, which is very very nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, but she was a studier of the Bible.
So
and can I just say that when Tommy would come to the house for a function, whether it's a communion or a christening, Tommy would always stray in about half an hour when we're just having the grub at the communion, and he'd stray in the back door, and then an hour later he'd be sitting in the corner of the function, the communion, the confirmation, himself and my mother, and all you could hear was
her talking
and Psalm 6 and John 4 to the 5th and John 5:16 and then it was like,
Tommy, do you mind if I quote you a thing from the book of Deuteronomy?
And then Tommy would go, but why Deuteronomy if we go back to this? And then I'd be there. It was like a convention. It was like one of those big Christian Catholic conventions. They were like two speakers getting ready to take the floor, engrossed for about 5 hours.
I'm fascinated by your mum reading the Bible around the house. Like, would she, in the sitting room, would she read
it? No, she'd read it at night time and morning time. But she would then write little pieces of paper and little quotes, and then she'd leave them stuck in between books.
Like love your neighbour and that kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, just little things like, you know, but I don't know how to explain them. I'll get one for you next week and I'll bring it to you here.
Have you any travels coming up?
We're halfway through something in Africa, a series in Africa where we were through Sudan and Ethiopia and Kenya, and we came back. I went away on the first week in February. We came back on the 12th of March. It was so funny.
Dude, that's five weeks on the road.
5 weeks, yeah. Normally we do about 12 weeks a year on the road. For the last four years solid on this one, yeah.
And did you find yourself settling in Africa? Like, did you, like, after a week, are you in the rhythm of the continent? Like, are you?
Yeah. It takes about, I mean,
Is it slower? If you think is it
about
faster?
If you think about it, me, Roscoe and Evan flew on the 6th of February, Dublin, Istanbul. And then we got on another Turkish flight, Istanbul, Khartoum. I mean, every image in your head of this Arabic Sahara, sub-Saharan, Sudan, Muslim country. This is a massive country, one of the biggest countries in Africa. And we were flying into Khartoum. This is like all the images I see of Hezbollah and ISIS and Syria. Think of all those dilapidated buildings, this old Muslim structure. It's where the White Nile meets the Blue Nile. It is where the land and creation, the Sudanese believe they're the first people of Africa as well. And then the Egyptians stole their ideas for pyramids. They had pyramids before them. But when we got there, we were in customs for about 5 hours. They were checking the serial numbers of cameras in all military equipment and everything. Some people were wearing masks, others weren't. There were pieces of paper from the government and checking cameras going, this, what is this for? You know, it was just mad. We finally got out of the
air. And was there a level of hostility off them, or were they just curious?
Curious, a little bit of hostility, foreign news crew coming in, journalists, what are you doing here? And with all these papers and we've all these journalist visas, finally we get out of the airport. We say we land there at 10 o'clock at night. We get out of the airport at 3 o'clock in the morning with all our gear. Like, we've loads of flight cases and loads of equipment, and we have to get that then and meet a driver for the first time. And then we all bus, throw it all into a van, and then he takes us down side streets and where it's all darkness.
And what's it like in the African night?
And there's sounds. It's the heat. It's that, you know, the crickets. The crickets. Yeah. And then,
but do you go to a hotel?
No,
or?
We went to a place called the Metropole, and it's a Greek guy who's been living in Sudan for 30 or 40 years. He has this sort of B&B hotel place right in the heart of Khartoum. And then you get into your room and there's a big air-conditioned fan over it, and it's pretty basic, and there's a sort of it's basic stuff. The bed is clean. You try and sleep the first night. You awake then the next morning with the sounds of the city. You don't know where you are. And I opened the shutters and walked out on the sort of small little balcony, and it was like looking down at a bustling Muslim street. And next minute at 12 o'clock, you hear Allah coming out of loudspeakers, and Roscoe then wakes up and we're outside looking around. The sun is blinding. It's 32 degrees and everyone is, we're in a Muslim world, and we're like, wow. And then cut 8 days later, when we're leaving, we're almost like the feeling of we're leaving this great country, these great people, because all my stereotypes and all the images that I'm given in my head are gone, because we had an absolutely amazing time in Sudan, in a country where you might be afraid that they all look like the way they do and what we perceive people to be. A lot of people think of terrorism when they see these type Sudanese, Muslim, and this world they live in. What mighty, great, ancient people. A country that had just overthrown Bashir after 30 years of dictatorship. 7 million people camped outside the palace last year for 52 days to overthrow the dictator. Hundreds were killed, and they finally got peace, and it's a new world in Sudan. And for us to make a show there, that's the rewarding part, and to make such good friends with the driver that at the end of his 8 days with our driver, the guy who picked us up at that airport, and we were all, well, I wonder what this is going to be like. 8 days later, I know about his family.
Does he speak English?
Yeah, a little bit of English. Yeah. I follow him on WhatsApp. You know, we were swapping photos. We were giving him a big hug, and he was our friend and our ally and our connection with there. And a great girl called Naba, who brought us into her family and brought us to a mosque and introduced her to her uncle, who's a sheikh and who's a very powerful man and in the area, and all the church. And it was just an amazing 8 days. So look at that. I'm very lucky that I can do these type of things. And it's mad. It is mad.
And tell me, do you ever get to a place like that and feel incredibly lonely, or feel as if you were in the wrong part of the world at the wrong time and you should be at home? going to training and missing the kids and the wife and missing the
Galway
culture.
When they were all babies and we used to head off for 3 months at a time when they were small, because we've been doing this show for 21 years,
yeah.
The travel show, it was easy when they were babies and when before they were babies. But now I have Shane, the 14-year-old, going, "Dad, I'll come with you. Can I not come with you?" And I said, Yeah, I can't come. Why are you coming to Siberia, Mongolia? Like, it's not as if you're staying down by the pool for 6 or 7 hours. It's pretty rough and rotten. Like, Africa is a difficult country. If you want to do Africa properly, you have to be prepared to get into a Hiace and drive along shit dirt roads for 9 hours. And it's everything you think it is, but it's so rewarding when you meet the people. And I firmly believe, and I've met loads of people, Tommy, I love people. And I think that this world we have, this planet we have, the people are what make it, and language makes it, and customs and cultures and everything I feel when I go into a new country. I'm just so lucky that I've met some great people. And at the back of it all, people are people, and they're fucking great when you meet them. No matter where they are, what colour of the world they are, what religion they have, there's some really, really good people around the world. And then we should never underestimate that's it. You know, this planet we're living on, it's people that make it. And Mother Nature and people are the most important things on this planet.
Tell us, was there ever a time where you felt under threat? And you said, "I got to get out of here. I'm in danger." Were you in prison in Mexico or something? Was that?
No, that was a high security prison in Bolivia.
Yeah. Was there anywhere where you felt...
No, the only place I really ever, in over nearly 100 countries that we've been to, the only place I felt I didn't like the vibe was years ago, about 10 years ago or more, we were in Mexico City. Mexico City is now the most populated city in the world. I think it's bigger than Bombay, and there's 34 or 38 or 40 million people in Mexico. Everyone goes to Mexico to try and seek their fame and fortune. It's the level of poverty and just explosion of people. It's just not able to deal with. Rudy Giuliani, the mayor of New York, was sent down to, after that zero tolerance when he was putting up with no shit in New York. He was sent down to try and get law and order into Mexico, into the city. But, excuse me, we were staying on an area called the Zocalo, which is like in Tiananmen Square. It's like Air Square in Galway. And we were staying in a lovely five-star, old Mexican, beautiful, 400-year-old hotel. Opened my shutters out onto the main plaza. I could the birds singing, the flowers on my balcony. Old world type marble. It was beautiful, old Mexican world. But when I went out on the street and I walked across the road to get money out of the bank machine, every night a family would move in there just to sleep. The most beautiful children you've ever seen in the world. A simple country man and woman, and I speak Spanish, I asked them where they're from, and they said they'd moved to the city, and every night that's where they slept. And like, I'm trying to step over the children to take out some money to go to dinner, and I'm there going, this is not right. So I didn't like that vibe there at all. But then when we went out on the main street all the time in Mexico, people were oye gringo, que haces aquí, que haces americano, what are you doing here, American? What are you doing here, gringo? Hey, Kathy's a key. Hey, there's just a vibe in Mexico where they just don't trust the white man.
And would you travel alone then?
I just didn't like the vibe in Mexico. Mexico's dodgy. This Mexico City is a dodgy city. We didn't feel Roscoe, when he holds up the camera, can have almost sixth sense around him when he's feeling the vibe. And we didn't like the vibes of people watching us in Mexico City. But when we went out around the countryside of Mexico, it was brilliant. But that was just...
Was there any awareness... when they called you an American and you said, "Actually, I'm Irish."
I turned around to go, "Oye, soy irlandés, me hija puta, ¿qué quieres?" I turned around to him and I go, "What the fuck are you on about, man? I'm Irish. Will you go way out of that?"
And do they have any concept of Irishness?
No, but they said, after a while, they go, "Hey, where do you speak Spanish like that?" And then all of a sudden, language breaks down the barrier straight away, where they have grown up with that, like Honduras, like Nicaragua, like all those countries have grown up with this animosity in a way, of a way that America has meddled in all of those places. It stuck its big paws and foot into all of Central America and fucked it all up. That they're just, that whole thing. And now you see it. Now it's been glamorized and narcos and everything. And the way, you know, Mexico and the cartels and all this. Mexico's really, really fucked up at the moment.
Did you ever get attacked anywhere along the way?
No, we were very lucky, touch wood. As I say, some of these people say to me, where's the most dangerous place you've ever been? And I'd say,
Tomb.
Yeah, outside the chipper. At 3 o'clock in the morning.
Beautiful stories, Hector.
Yeah, yeah, but that's it. You know, that's where we are at the moment. It's at A to Z of Africa. We've done Sudan. We've done Ethiopia. I'll leave you with this. In Sudan, just outside Khartoum, is the biggest camel market in the world. And like, I'd be there going, Evan, my producer, go, look what we have now and now. I found a guy who sells camels. And I'd be going, yes, because it's no more than selling cattle above at the mart or whatever, farming. So I said, we're going to the biggest camel market in Africa. We drove out about 20 miles outside Khartoum, and in the distance then, you know, you can see this, the heat ripples.
Yes.
And then I can see camels, and then I look to the left and there's camels, and Ross goes in the front, go, boys, look at this, there's camels fucking everywhere. Because as a cameraman, this is a cameraman's dream.
Yes.
This is a cameraman's dream.
Oh,
and
Lord.
Ross goes, go, get out the sticks quick, which means get the tripod out of the boot and get shooting. He's there going, and then we let him off because I know he's getting camels coming here. Next minute, there's these big telescopic yokes, you know, the telescopic things they use, those things they use on building sites that go doo, 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 and the thing goes up manoscopic,
like a teleporter
called. Like a teleporter. Next minute you see them going down and picking up
the camels.
They're picking up the camels in a special thing, and they go doo, 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 and the camel is about 40 foot in the air, and he's going back into a truck, and they're leaving him down. Next minute he's coming down, and the lads are going over to another camel, putting this undercarriage under the camel, putting this, the ropes on the side of him, going, hello, who you by hide, which means, let her go there, Johnny, let her go. And next minute, the teleporter's lifting another camel up. Next minute, the five big camels above in the lorry are looking out like this, going, where are we going? They're off to Abu Dhabi. They've been sold to Abu Dhabi or Bahrain or somewhere. And there's camels everywhere. And then I said, this is paradise. So then we were like, can we speak to one of these guys? Next minute, I'm in the middle of all these boys and all their Arabic gear and their all the Muslim, the turbans, the headbands, and they're farmers, they're camel farmers. I'm in the middle of them with my interpreter, and I'm going, can you ask him how many camels he's selling today and where he's from? And he goes, Hector, this man has walked his camels 16 days and 16 nights to get here from this city in the east. I'm going, unbelievable. And what's he hoping to get? Oh, he's hoping to get about $2,500 per camel. And I start going, oh no, sorry, I don't know what price it was, thousands of dollars. And I said, how many sell that? And he'll sell them all today. And next minute he's going over, and I can see them slapping hands and interchanging and wads of cash moving, and then they're done. And he's happy, comes back over to me, he goes after selling his old stock. And the maddest thing ever was to see them going up on the teleport.
And can you milk a camel?
Yeah, you can. Camel milk is lovely.
You could milk a dog if you were determined.
But again, those stories, to be in a place... To be in a place like that is just amazing.
And what do they use? The fellow who's buying the camel, what is he going to use the camel for?
Yeah. They could be racing, or they could be used as...
pretend cows.
Camel meat and camel milk.
Burgers.
Camel meat, camel milk and camel racing. But the market all over the Arab Emirates, all over Dubai, all over Bahrain, all over Abu Dhabi, all over Saudi Arabia love their camels. Sudan.
They hate their women, but they love their camels.
Sudan is just outside Khartoum, is the biggest camel market in the world. And there was the Irish boy in the middle of it all. Love it.
Did you get up on one?
I'll sell it all one now. Sell it all. 550, 550, 560, 570, 570. There's a lovely camel here born in the spring.
Two humps.
Tell us about the when you arrive home, right? And would the kids or your missus ever just kind of gather at your feet at the fire and say, Dad, tell us a story from somewhere around the world. Like, would it be like...
No, my missus is very funny now when I come home, because for years we were going to Asia and places, and I'd buy every bit of indigenous jewellery and special wooden clogs from Colombia, maybe. and it, when you're away like that, everything sounds so cool. Your man goes, this is made from the bottom of a wooden coffee tree here in Honduras. And this is a clogs. These are sandals we've made. And to us, we're like, oh, they're class. They're brilliant. And we bargain them down from about $4 down to 50 cents. We buy three pairs of them. Roscoe, will you get one for your missus? Yeah, Evan, one for your missus. Yeah, give us three pairs of those. Oh, that jewellery. Oh, yeah, these are made from special stones. We'll take three of those as well. I used to come home with bags of stuff. And she'd be like, in the beginning, the novelty was there. Now she says, if you ever come home with fucking shite from abroad. So now what we do is I just go, I'm in Heathrow. What do you want? Fuck Joe Malone. No. New Calvin Klein. Yeah. Okay. And then the other two lads going, how are you? Where are you? Not how was the trip? Where are you? I'm in Heathrow. What do you want? Yes, another bottle of Millionaire.
That's an aftershave, isn't it?
That's an aftershave.
But in terms of this, would the lads be curious for stories?
Not in the million years, because at 14 and 16, it's Snapchat and Fortnite. They couldn't give a shit if their dad was after. Do you know?
Is your dad in Africa? I don't give a fuck. I'm outside Central.
That's classic, yeah. Fucking Africa.
We have two dogs, and I was up for taking the dogs for a walk. I don't like taking the dogs for a walk when I have to have them on a lead, because I like to go to a field where you can, or the bog road or a forest, where you take the dog off the lead and he just runs off and does his own thing, and I'm not pulling him out of bushes, or I'm not stopping him sniffing or spraying. He can do his own thing. We'll just walk together, but not tied together. Through the fire, and I find taking a dog on a lead stressful. It's not good for me, it's not good for the dog, neither of us are happy. But the dog needed a walk, so I had to take him for a walk up the road the other day. And my wife says to me, as I was leaving the house, take this. And it was a little pouch with a plastic bag in it for me to pick up dog shit if the dog shat. And I refused. And I think it's one of the signifiers of the corruption of humankind, that we are now walking behind dogs picking up their shit. Well, isn't that just the most? You know what I mean? We used to be nomadic people, following reindeers, hunting elephants. And now we're walking after Labradoodles picking up their shit.
And they're laughing at you.
Their dog is laughing at you. Hey, Tom, look.
Pick up me shit.
I know, it's only a fart. It's only a fart. Stay handy, Tom. Stay handy. I'm going to walk up here. Hey, Tom, come here. Come here. You wouldn't do this a favour, will you? Wipe me a hole, will you? I'm just taking a dump here. Look at it.
Pick up me shit, you fool.
Yeah. You think
you're a fool.
You're a fool.
And any time I see somebody picking up dog shit, I make a point of going over to them and telling them that. The dog's laughing at you. You're a fool. Well, isn't it the most awful thing to see?
Well, I used to live in an apartment in Ballina, and there used to be a dog that would come and, like, he'd do his shit outside my door. So, you know...
Because he liked you.
Yeah, but that's in an urban area.
Why didn't his manager
in an urban area. We need to keep it clean.
I'm not... Look,
out in the countryside.
I'm not saying that when a dog shits on a pavement...
Yes.
You shouldn't... Clean it up.
Yeah, just what in the wild.
No. What I'm saying is there's something fundamentally wrong with the culture that would lead to that situation. Now,
of us picking
right,
it up.
If you're half reared on a farm, aren't you?
Yeah, fully reared. Yeah.
Fully reared. At any stage during your upbringing, did you ever see father, mother, brother or sister, uncle, aunt or neighbour picking up shit after a dog?
No.
Ever?
No.
Oh, where did the dog shit?
Everywhere.
Right. Well, not in the house, like.
No. No, but I mean outside.
Outside. Then. Because humankind and animal kind were living in a kind of sympathy with one another. You knew that the dog, wherever the dog shat, it was going to be okay because you lived in an open space.
Yes.
Right? So that's the way it should be. No one ever, like, to me, it's like if people kept pet cows and took a cow for a walk in the prom and he does a big cow pat and the ridiculousness of seeing somebody try and scoop that up would be obvious to everybody. Either the cow or the prom is in the wrong place.
Yes.
And I'm just saying to you, we've become used to seeing people picking up, the dogs are laughing at us, used to seeing people pick up dog shit. And I'm saying it's as abhorrent to me as seeing somebody cleaning up after a cow. It's a signifier that things have gone off the fucking rails entirely.
Did the dog have a shite up the road?
No, he didn't. I wouldn't let him. It didn't slow down.
You told him not to, did you?
We didn't.
Don't.
We didn't drop pace. He tried to squat and I said, no!
Out!
I was picked up. I had to run for the whole 3.5 miles.
Not here! Please, a little one. No! Keep moving.
Did you have him on the lead?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But to me, they're kind of signifiers that things aren't right.
Yeah.
You have a dog, Hector.
I do. Yeah, no, I'm on about. I love the way the dogs wee their territory. I really do appreciate how they mark there. And I love that. And I love when a different car comes into the house, the first thing the dog will do is he'll go out and he'll say, County Clare.
Garage.
Just outside Ennis. Six people in the house. He knows everything from the smell of the tyres of a car. Isn't that magnificent?
He knows everything.
A dog can smell 6 miles away. We can't even smell what's on in the kitchen.
We can smell them.
The powers of a dog, Tommy.
Yeah, a dog can. You're right about the car, but he's no way of communicating that information. That's the downfall of dogs.
Did I tell you this?
It's like a dog can smell a car.
You do know from his eyes, Tommy. When I said to him,
that's the only way of communicating. That's like one of them fellows has a bad accident and then he has to look at different letters on the keyboard.
Do you know?
In order to communicate with you. Do you know what I mean? The dog is trapped inside. The dog, like...
No, I believe
the dog
it.
Knows stuff,
believe,
but he has no way of telling you
yeah,
what he
but
knows.
I believe it's his eyes. If you look closely, and what I urge people to do is, any dog people there, have you a dog?
Yeah.
What make is he?
I don't know. He's sort of a collie sort of a thing.
Now, and you live out the country?
Yeah.
Right. Have you ever... So, do you ever pick up your dog shit? No. Because
he's
there's no
a
need.
What's his name?
Yeah. Sally. It's a girl.
She's a girl. She's a half collie, is she?
Yeah.
And she's more of a farm dog.
Ah, I suppose. Yeah.
And is she old?
No, she's young.
Would you walk her?
Sometimes.
Tell me this. Would she get dry?
There's plenty of places for her to run around.
Would you give her dry food? Or would you give
yeah,
her...
She's not
would you feed her from the table?
She's not fond of the dry food. My father sort of insists she eats it, but he says, geez, that dog doesn't have any appetite at all. She doesn't like what you're giving her.
Yeah, she likes the food.
Oh, he thinks
eating.
He says if she was the right dog, she'd eat anything.
Would she have like Cocoa Pops or something?
Yeah, she'd probably like porridge, like ready break or something.
With a bit of honey in it and yeah. slices of banana. A few
raspberries.
A few blueberries.
Yeah.
And for lunch, what would she have then?
Oh, like a big chicken sandwich. With
get me a chicken roll from Centra.
A side salad and a couple of crisps.
I wouldn't take too much to do with her. She's up
there. I
don't have a dog personally myself. It's up at home. We've always had a dog in our house.
I'd never give wet food to my dog. My dog eats dry nuts from the day he was born.
What kind of a dog is he?
Oh, he's a Jack Russell. He's a beast of a lad. The Muslim.
But it's awful boring, it must be, for a doggy.
No, I keep him hungry till 6 in the evening and I go, are you hungry? And he goes, I know by the eyes of him.
Yeah.
He comes in, I give him lovely...
And the fact that he's emaciated.
A lovely cold
no
water.
No dog food.
He gets his food at 6 in the evening.
But no,
it's only a small little dog. Shouldn't overfeed them. They're more than feeding goldfish. And that's the problem people have. A tank of goldfish. So many goldfish die in this country every year. By tanks coming into the house. And lovely this. And they don't even have a filter in them. And they get that lovely flakes. And they go sprinkle, sprinkle, sprinkle. Should the goldfish is there going, this is unbelievable. Goldfish is elite. And eat and eat and eat.
I had a goldfish.
They'll shit in the water. There's no filter. It poisons the water. Goldfish gone.
But
you don't feed a goldfish once a day, Tommy. One flake.
He'll
come up and he'll peck at that and he's down again.
But tell me, you don't feed the dog in the morning?
No, I don't think he's hungry in the morning. He's got a good...
You don't think he's hungry? You don't think the dog
I
is
don't
hungry?
Think he's hungry.
I bet he goes to
He's a small dog, Tommy.
And you look in his eyes and you go, he's not hungry.
No, but I know, but he gets his treats. Now, he does get these treats. They're called dentist sticks. There's these
dental sticks.
You know,
yeah.
The dental sticks. And he puts them between his two paws like that. And he's out in the... I give him one or two of them a day. He's a good lad. He gets a treat during the day.
He's a good lad.
He'll put them up there between his thing and he'll chomp down on the dentist sticks. He does like them. And then at 6, he'll have his good food. He'll have his good meal. He'll have a square meal about 6 o'clock. He's happy. And my favourite time...
But just dried nuts. You don't give him dog food.
No,
like
but
I
buy
dog.
quality dried nuts now. I'd buy from a major agricultural supplier.
Does he get constipated with that stuff?
No, he's pretty regular. He did have a season or two where he ate grass.
Oh, that's a bad job. And then they vomited.
I swear to God, he'd be up the garden and he'd be there.
He thought he was a calf.
The next minute,
But you have to be diligent and kind of you know that even though the dog was eating grass, he wasn't hungry.
No.
He wasn't hungry. He's licking the sides of cars driven up from County Clare, but he's not hungry.
I bet he goes over to the neighbour's house and eats their dog food.
My dog is interesting. He's an interesting Jack Russell. When we put out the washing and when it's a lovely day of drying and the quilts are out and the pillowcases and the sheets and about 900 tracksuit bottoms from the boys, 75 Hugo Boss boxer shorts, 400 and then one pair of boxer shorts for dad,
yeah,
a bra and about 10 knickers for my wife. Yeah. I have one t-shirt on the line, right? The dad, because nobody washes father's clothes anymore. It's just 900 jerseys.
Did you ever think of using one of the wife's tongs as a face mask?
And then,
do you know what I mean? Like for this, we
should try one out.
Do you know what I mean? Put the stringy bits around the back of your head.
Yeah, they could work, but
because a lot of them, a lot of the fronts in a tong would be breathable.
They would, tong, of course.
But my dog, when I don't know what it is, and I think he's really smart, and this is go back to what you're saying. Rocco will go up there. He'll be at the line. He'll see me at the line, and it's a lovely day drying, and the sun and the wind, and the waft of Lenore off the quilt covers. And
oh, beautiful. I'm more comfort now. I wouldn't like the
one
Lenore.
And the sheets. And then I'll come back in and I'll look up the garden and I'll see him and he'll be stretched out underneath the sheets. He's just loving it. I think he loves the smell of the line and the drying and that. He's his favourite place in the garden.
Yeah, either that or he's just pure exhausted from not getting fed.
The final thing I'll say about my dog
is... he's getting some oxygen.
The final thing I'll say about Jack Russell, and this is to the Jack Russell lovers, and there are tens of thousands of Jack Russell lovers and millions all over the world, by the way. I am happiest when I come in after having a couple of drinks.
I'll have a chat with the dog.
And he's just calf nuts.
No, I love it. Say we're after getting a taxi back out from about 20 minutes out of the city and I'll be a little bit bursty for a wee after being out in the town. And I love going in and saying to Rocco, bye-bye, come on, we'll help me do a wee-wee. And I'll go up the garden and it'll be a lovely moonlit night. And I'll say to him, mom, we'll do a wee-wee together. And he'll just look at me. And again, I know he's talking to me and I'll just... find a nice patch and it'll be spray and I'll get that puddle sound, you know. Gushing. And Rocco then will come up beside me, right beside me, and say, do your wee-wee for Daddy. And he'd lift...
cock the leg.
He'd lift the leg and the two of us will wee into the same. And I'll go, isn't this beautiful? Out in the air.
The two lads.
The two boys. And then I'll go, come on. And he'll scumper back in and then I'll give him another little treat and I'll say, good night, Rocco.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
So I need a little bit of help. I was watching something on the television the other night and it was about a pescatarian. No?
They only eat fish, is it?
Yes, well, that's what I thought, but it was a religion.
Oh, the Episcopalians.
Yes. Yeah. We were watching, it was about Episcopalians, and I said, oh, aren't they the people that only eat fish?
Yeah.
No.
No, it's not. No, they're I don't know, I don't know, Loretta.
You don't know what they eat?
No, are they a Protestant kind of, there's loads of different Protestant churches, and up north as well, it's funny, you can start your own church.
Yeah.
You know, you it's kind of like...
a Baptist church, a new Baptist church.
Yeah, but you can be a member of... You could be an Episcopalian or whatever it is, and you can start your own church. It's not like Catholicism where there's the parish of Barn and the parish of Furbo.
Yeah, yeah.
And each parish has a priest. In North and in the Protestant ones, you could say, okay, well, I've got a degree in divinity, or, you know, I'm and I want to start a church, and you get a building. and you would turn it into a church, and you would have, you would start preaching every Sunday.
Ian Paisley created his own church.
Totally, but you know, you'd have fellas doing it, and there wouldn't be more than three or four people turning up, and then they get hired. Then, if there's no one going to your church, you can become a kind of a tramp
and go to another
preacher,
one.
And you could kind of, you could be paid. I'm talking this week in North Antrim, and I'm talking next week in South Antrim, and I'm talking back to North Antrim, and then I'm off to Down, and you know what I mean.
So, yeah, yeah.
And they earn money that way. So it's a whole other different way of doing it. You know,
it's a real American thing, isn't it? There's a lot.
It's the other way around. The American thing is a Northern Irish thing.
This Protestantism is the root of so many splinters. There's so many.
No, but what I was going to say was that the way, the reason it is the way it is in America
is from
Scotland.
Really?
And Protestants.
And from the Protestants.
Protestants.
Yeah.
I think it was a boat. The
Protestants splintered away from the Catholic Church initially, didn't they?
Yes. Yeah.
And there was a boat of.
And maybe they were right too, because they were not what they were. One of the,
they wanted to get married, didn't they?
No. Well, that was part of it. But the part of it was that they thought the Catholicism had become too corrupt with imagery and floweriness and
statues.
The Protestants said, no, we're going to cut that back. Jesus said, have no. What did he say? He don't make an image of God or something like that. So I think they call it idolatry. And the Protestants were. So if you go into a Protestant church now, like Catholic churches are. To me, the Catholics are like the Hindus, right? They're mad. Hindus are mad into colours and elephants and flowers and all types of gods and ceremonies. And where the Catholics are like that, all different. The communion, confirmation, the Palm Sunday, Good Friday, all the other type of stuff. But the Protestants are like strict Muslims. It's like cut right back to the purity of the thing. Cut right back. There'd be no. Like if you go into a Protestant church, there's fuck all in it, like.
Some of them don't allow statues in. Yeah, some of them don't want singing.
The bare bones of the church.
Mm.
Nothing on the walls.
But, you can have Baptist. You can have Lutheran. You can have millions. And that's why, you say, Tommy, there is so many of them, especially down south in America. You could have a rural part of Alabama where there could be seven different Protestant churches, all with different names on them, doing different things in there. And it was all because of how Protestantism
came from Europe and Scotland
on a boat, a load of Protestant monks.
Tell me, would you like? You'd be a good preacher now.
What would your church be, Tommy?
My church would be the
you
church.
You create your own one now.
Would you be in a community centre or prefab?
It would be the Church of the Risen Fool.
Right.
That'd be my church.
And what would your what would the nature of your preaching be?
Would you allow?
I said my nature of my preaching would be, if it's not funny, it's not right.
Would you allow statues?
I'd insist on them.
Would you allow singing?
Oh, what I would like to do is I'd like to be like the American guys who are on the stage and they have a choir of beautiful women behind them.
And they're like.
And they're clapping and swinging and there's a fella on the harmonium and there's women standing up and they're shaking. There's snakes falling out of people's trousers. There's there's elephants banging on the door to get in.
Elephant jazz musicians.
Preaching would be.
You'd love that.
Funny, takes us right back to Andy Farrell in Mass in Navan.
Yeah.
And he was the first preacher I ever came across, and my instinct was to contradict him.
But, you know, you can. Like, you could be very. People are vulnerable to preachers, you know, I think.
But you're. Who?
People are looking for something. They go to these people. You can manipulate people very easy in these. In places like this. Like, you could create a church now, right? And you could. You see
was
these
this an American
America,
documentary you're watching? Yeah,
they
the millionaires, millionaires.
Well, you
ever
see,
would you ever go to the religious section of your Skybox?
No.
Oh, you should try it. And just scroll down through God TV, Faith TV. And you now, some of the Africans are great. Right? The Africans are what your Lord Jesus Christ came to me, and he said, I will not, I will say, and my brother said to him, you do not go there because the Lord Jesus Christ will come and save your soul. And it's awful crack, and they're sincere. And then you turn on the American ones, and there's this little schleveen of a fellow with the.
That's what I'm talking about, those boys.
With millionaires.
With the comb over and the snaky moustache going across.
Lord.
The top. And he's there. And he's holding up a dishcloth with a picture of Jerusalem on it. And he's going, I only have 300 of these left, specially made tea towels with a picture of Jerusalem. And if you
click the button right now,
if you send me, it's only $300.
And then in the front row, who's in the front row?
No, these aren't people in a
studio.
This is QVC
in a studio, you know. And what they do is they're all very pro-Israel as well, you know. So they can go, you know, because Israel is the holy land, you know. So there's a connection there between evangelicals and the Israeli state as well, which is kind of, it's an odd mix, but you don't get a good feeling coming off it. Mm. Now, you get very sincere, brilliant Christians every now and again on them. There's a great guy called T.D. Jakes, and he has a show called The Potter's Wheel. Right. And he's a fantastic preacher. He's a black guy, and he gives people advice.
I was talking to my wife and I said, "Woman, you crazy. Woman, you crazy." And then he goes, "Yeah." And the problem is, I'm crazy too. But my crazy can't fix your crazy. You gotta fix your crazy yourself. And people are standing up and they go, "Woo! That's right, woman. Yeah. Take care of your crazy. I got no problem taking care of my crazy. You gotta take care of your crazy. I can't fix you. I can't. I'm crazy myself. Tell me I'm not crazy. You're crazy."
See, I like them. Oh, I like that's good.
His name is T.D. Jakes.
Oh man, we'll have to follow him
on the Potter's Wheel.
T.D. Jakes.
Yeah, he's fantastic, but he's sincere,
and he's speaking talking to them like they want. That's the way they want
it. But have we all become very vulnerable as like societies? Like you'd believe anything now. We don't think we're not very independent thinkers anymore. We just follow the.
In what sense now?
If the three of us set up a religious channel, not a religious channel, but if we wanted to sell stuff,
well, we're setting up a podcast anyway.
But if we wanted to, like, it's not
vulnerability. I don't think you're
is it? People it's, just.
I think Irish people would be very slow to that. I think.
I think we would be too. Yeah.
But Irish people.
But
I
Americans,
think,
they would like.
Oh yeah.
I mean, stuff.
Yeah.
Like if we went over there and we decided
the big boys, the big pastors, like these churches, some of the big churches in the South especially, you could fit 10,000, 5,000 in. These are big.
But they're money making machines. They're not preaching. They're not religious.
A one horse town.
I was in Houston in Texas doing some stand up comedy. Could have been the year of 2004, the winter 2005. And I went to Joel Osteen.
Oh yeah, he would be the
Michael Jordan of God.
The Wayne Rooney of it. Yeah. He's on a lot of money.
So what they did was...
He's a preacher.
Yeah. And he set up his own church. Or he took over his father's church or something like that. And they're so successful that they bought the stadium where the Houston Rockets used to play basketball. They have services, I think, 4 or 5 times a week. And on a Sunday or a Saturday night... You could have 40,000 people.
Stop
at it.
In it.
So I went down and we were
8 o'clock mass on a Sunday, Saturday night.
I mean, phenomenal. And we went to the mass and there's a we didn't even call it a mass. It's kind of like just a ceremony of some sort. There's a waterfall.
Did they have baskets?
Do the collection
with the two fish and the five loaves.
The boy is thinking they're doing a great
job. Yeah,
they have a waterfall on stage. They have like this beautiful band and, you know, long haired guy playing guitar and all this type of stuff. And I was there watching it. And what struck me about it was it's very sincere and these people have good intentions. And they're holding up the Bible at the very beginning. They say, "I swear by this book, I will do my best for myself. I will do the best for my family. I will do the best for my community. I want to be a loving servant of God." And it's real sincere, like it's real heart stuff. What struck me was we asked for permission to film and we'd asked for permission to meet Joel afterwards. And they said, "Yeah, sure, no problem." And I guess they did it because they had hoped, they had heard we were from Ireland and stuff like that. And they had hoped to come over to Ireland, maybe set up a branch of the church over here. So that's why they agreed to the filming. But what struck me about it was, to me, Jesus was all about the strays. Do you know what I mean? That no matter how odd or weird you were, that there was room for you in his church. Like, if you think of how the different people he hung around with, like, you know, all broken people, all kind of people who didn't fit in. And Jesus is telling people, don't let society decide your values. You know, you got to think, kind of beyond your societal norm. So he's hanging out with tax collectors and prostitutes and drunkards, and he's, you know, Peter was the first pope, wasn't he?
Mm.
And Peter was the fellow who denied Christ three times before the cock crowed. Like, so he's picking people who are vulnerable and have weaknesses, and he says, these are the people.
Well, smart move.
But we see he's going, these are the people that are kind of the foundation of my church. It's not the strong, it's not the amazing, it's the weak and the vulnerable.
Mm.
So I'm there in this church, and there's a black kid there, and he has autism, and he's walking up and down the aisle, you know, and he's shouting at people, and he's waving his hands up in the air. And the guy who was acting as the go-between between myself and Joel didn't want him filmed and pushed him to the side because he wasn't giving out the proper
message.
Image of the church.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what struck me. That's, you know, that said, okay, well, this really isn't
marketing
about,
behind it all.
Or this isn't bigger. About the strays.
No.
This is about success.
No, but you went right into the big boy. He is the big boy over there.
Mm.
It's mad, isn't it?
So, yeah, there you go.
I was down with the relations there in Clare 2 Sundays ago, and it was a lovely day.
East Clare now or West Clare?
No, in the heart of the middle of Clare.
Middle of Clare.
Crusheen.
Oh, yeah. Different temperaments in different parts of County Clare. Like West Clare, kind of glamorous, sunshine.
West Clare, vibey, Willie Clancy.
Surfing.
Yeah. Hippie-ish.
Hippies in vans. Bohemia.
Bikes
smell
with
of patchouli
gears.
Oil, yes.
Yeah.
East Clare.
East Clare, harsh.
At war with Tip all the time.
Just farm and the hard land. That's my turf land there. Yeah, east is nothing. Bit of water.
But Martin Hayes, in fairness, comes from
Portumna, wild open land.
Portumna's Galway.
Yeah.
Yeah, down the far side of Portumna be Clare.
Yeah, but Scariff, Tulla.
Scariff, Tulla, Currafin.
Those places. Currafin is Galway.
Currafin and Clare. Currafin is Clare.
There's 2 Currafins.
There's 7 Currafins in the country. Yeah, this is Crusheen. They hadn't won a senior hurling title until about 9 years
ago. Eddie Lenehan country.
Oh, yeah.
So this is Crusheen is the middle of Clare.
Yeah. It's
and what's the vibe in the middle of Clare?
I'll tell you the vibe of it. You go on the motorway past Gort for about 11 miles.
Yeah.
The Burns straddles you to the right. And to the left, as you know, you're coming to Crusheen. You look to the left just before the flyover for Crusheen and they get off the road. There is a little mound with about 60 toy geese on it.
That's right.
And
a lot of our listeners would know that in the same way they'd know the strange kind of druids outside Tullamore that are made of stainless steel.
We all know that.
Or the
just
elk
on the left
on the outskirts of Cork.
Yes, just on the left there's about 40 or 50 toy geese and your man has flags and everything. It's a shrine to Crusheen. I turned off there, went to the relations' house. It was a Sunday. The boys were down there from the night before. I walked in. The four of them were playing Fortnite.
Oh, yeah.
The brother-in-law and the sister-in-law were just there in the pyjamas.
What? What time of the day is this?
This is 12 o'clock. It was a cocooning session. It was a cocooning. We were allowed visit. So we had a lovely morning and the rashers.
Did you get fed?
The rashers and the sausages were on and the fried eggs. Then the
mid-Clare fry.
And is it good?
Oh.
Wouldn't have much of a reputation outside
bread.
Of mid-Clare.
Soda bread.
Homemade.
Great pots of tea.
Marmalade. How you got?
All the brothers and all come in.
I bet you places like that do great tea, but shit coffee.
Oh, they wouldn't
never
have
get
coffee.
Coffee
instant
down there.
Coffee.
I'd never get coffee down there.
No, you wouldn't. You'd have to come to Tommy Tiernan's house for a decent cup of coffee.
Four young lads. There was a 7-year-old. There was a 5-year-old. There was a 9-year-old.
He grew up very
14,
fast at 5
and 16. And I said to my brother-in-law Timmy, I said, "What are we doing for the day? Will we go to Lahinch?" And he went, "No, I'm not going to Lahinch." I says, "I like that." He said, "Why?" "It'd be full of fucking tourists and they'd be fucking." Packed up there, and I said, "You're right. I'm fed up going to Lahinch. Let's do something different." I said, "Is there anywhere we can go for a walk?"
The plaza on the motorway
for your lunch.
The toll booth.
He says, "We'll go up Mullaghmore," and I'd never been up Mullaghmore.
Oh, yeah.
So, cut a long story short.
No, don't.
We all went up.
Drag it out.
We all went up, and we had a lovely day in Mullaghmore.
Now, explain Mullaghmore to us.
Yeah,
Mullaghmore
where
is it? Is where they had that Mullaghmore. Is the side of the Burren, on the left-hand side of the Burren there, over the back of Tubber and Boston, and look up to the mountain. They were going to have the interpretive centre there.
That's right.
15, 20 years ago, it was off shenanigans. There was war. There was lads going round and hoods and turnmen and pike.
Turnmen?
No,
hoods Termites.
And bonfires and saying, "You're not putting any interpretive centre in here." It was like... It was Ku Klux Klan basically stuff going on. You won't put that in here. You won't put that interpretive centre in our mountain. Which is why when you drive up to Mullaghmore now,
that would be a a kind of, that would be an issue that the Ku Klux Klan wouldn't normally be associated with.
Interpreter of sentences.
Do you know what I mean? Like, a lot of the Ku Klux Klan, what we know, is mainly racist, but they also have faction that is against interpretive sentences.
Yes, yeah, I heard about that, right?
They're dead against
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think
they're
you get the vibe there. It. There was just, when they're set against something happening in their community.
On with the sheets, the two little eyes cut out. Yeah. There'll be no...
Get the fuck off our land!
The cones up in their heads.
They were very irate. And there was a lot of stuff going on. There was a lot of people saying, you won't build that
you can't park
on
here.
This place. So I drove up to it now. And there's no parking spaces. So we walked the mountain and it was lovely and we had a great day and we took photographs and it was a lovely day. So my in-laws.
It's a mountain.
It's a mountain
but
on the side of the Burren.
Can I ask you a question? Why would you need an interpretive centre there? Like, what did they... What
well, no, it's no
there?
More than the Cliffs of Moher after putting in the gift shops and diddly, yeah. and diddly and putting it all in the thing on the left-hand side of the car park.
This is a wild.
Calvary. The Via Dolorosa, the path of sorrow. Sure, there's shops on that, like Christ sure, carrying the cross up to his death,
but
you're and there's
but you're the shops
there's a centre on it.
I got
you can get tens off.
I got the worst case of diarrhea on the Great Wall of China.
No,
as we drove outside of Beijing, big day, no more. Oh, we're going to the biggest camel market in Africa. The Wall of China. This is great. Oh, the Great Wall. Me, Roscoe, and Evan. And I'm not joking you, when we got there, it was like getting out in Bundoran. There was about four little chip shops, four little burger joints, and lads selling sweets, and the Great Wall of China was behind them. I was completely let down. So anyway, 11 o'clock in the morning.
And you got diarrhea.
We were hungry. I says, we'll have a burger. Well, I'm not joking you. About 11 o'clock that night, the bubbles and the gurgling started in my stomach. Roscoe comes into my hotel room in Beijing. He said, man, I'm bad. I said, how bad? He said, it's like lava out of a volcano. I said, I'm bad too. Next 4 days and four nights. By the end of it, it was just water. There was nothing. We got food poisoning on a dodgy burger.
What kind of a
at
burger?
At the Great Wall of China. And then when I got up on the Great Wall of China, they only allow you to walk 50 yards because the rest is protected. I wanted to run off into the distance. I wanted to go off and stand on my own.
It's about 3,500 miles long.
Yeah, the Chinese had cut it in and they said, only to here today. And there's a guy there standing, full military uniform, stop. Yeah. Oh, man. Anyway, go back to the story. I had a lovely day in Mullaghmore. Lovely day with the in-laws and the thing. Bah, bah, bah. Back to the house. Say goodbye. We're going back to Galway. So as I was driving back up on the road from Gort.
The plastic geese.
Yeah.
I'd gone by the geese and there on the left-hand side, pulled in, was a speed van.
Oh.
On the motorway.
The dreaded speed van.
And you know the feeling. I was in the right-hand lane. Yep. And you jam on the brakes.
Jesus Christ, I didn't know.
You jam on the brakes. You go, fuck it. Spring down that speedometer as quick as you fucking can. Get down under 100. Get down. You're going by it. And as they're going, he's after ruining my day.
How fast were you going?
I don't know. About 120.
But you're now going
120. Yeah, but it could have been 130. And then I just went, why is that? He's just pulled in there. So anyway, I want to go on about 9, 10 miles past the flyover of Rathenry, on towards the N7, M17. I turned off on the Turlock Moor Road and I come off a roundabout and I go down by Fahy's garage and then there's a lovely little place where tractors pull in. And what was there? A fucking speed van. Again. I thought I'd gone by him. And then all the boys are flashing me on the road and I just felt like I'm back up to the speed van and fucking breaking the windows and taking the air out of the tyres and going, why are you doing this? Why are we being persecuted by these snaky little snide little vans that are just pulled in to catch us? It's a disgrace. I hate them. And then I saw a lad the other day at the same place who was fixing one and I wanted to get out and have an argument with him. Yeah. They just piss me off. I hate them. They just ruined the day for me. It was a lovely Sunday. And twice within the space of 20 minutes, I was caught out in the country that I pay tax in and that everything I do, and I love this country, and they're snaky. You don't see it in France. You don't see it in Spain. You don't see they're pulling in
the Sudan.
You don't see it in the Sudan. They're hidden. They just get in these lovely little places with a bush in front of them.
And you're safe enough driving. Like you feel it's
I'm a good driver. I'm not a bad driver. I'm not reckless. But I just fucking hate speed vans.
This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
I was in Australia a couple of years ago and we were driving.
It'd be a shorter list of countries that you haven't been to.
Yeah.
No.
Where have you not been?
I'm trying to paint pictures. There's a few places I haven't been.
Norway.
What I do like doing...
I've been there, it's great.
What I do like
doing...
I've been to Norway, yeah.
Iceland.
Of course he has.
Iceland, yes.
Greenland.
No.
Never been to Greenland?
No.
South Korea?
Yes.
Vietnam?
Yes.
Of course you have. Cambodia?
Yes.
India?
Yes.
China?
Yes.
Wow. North Korea?
No.
No one's been to North Korea?
No.
Uruguay?
Yes.
Amazing, man. Amazing.
Brazil?
Yes. I got married in Brazil.
Why?
I'll tell you that story.
Switzerland?
No. Great. Go on, keep going. Go on, think of the countries.
Where in the world has Hector not been?
Finland.
Yes.
Turkey. Oh,
yes. Yeah,
Russia. You've been to Russia. Zambia.
Yes.
Wow, my God.
Nigeria.
Yes.
Cyprus.
No. Tommy! This is the stuff we need back in geography, because so many kids are giving up geography these days. This is why. What is the capital of Albania?
Tirana.
Well done. I love the capitals being countries, and countries and capitals was brilliant. Rivers. But I was in Australia a couple of years ago, and we were out in the middle of Aboriginal and out in the middle of Ayers Rock, and we were in Alice Springs, and I thought Alice Springs is going to be like this paradise, but it was full of Aboriginal lads lying down like winos and homeless, and I was going, oh man, there's problems everywhere.
Good any ginge, man.
Yeah, good. And
there's
borrowing and trying to get money off us, going into the shop. Yeah. And we got this Jeep anyway. What we wanted to do was wanted to go out into the desert and drive for days and head down towards Uluru, Ayers Rock.
Oh, yeah.
So we got this big 7-litre Toyota Land Cruiser. Excuse me. And we said, we'll set off. We went to the drive-thru place for the beer. We got all the supermarket stuff, and we got gallons and gallons and gallons of water. And we had an extra cans of petrol and gas and diesel left than we needed. We were self-sufficient for a 650-kilometre journey through the Australian desert in high summer.
Hmm.
4 or 5 hours into the journey, I'm driving.
There'd be dogs dead of the heat in the south.
The heat, and it's where the left and right just singed. Singed.
Birds eating them.
Singed. Just desert and singedness.
Singedness. Getting the
word. Do you know that when you singe your hand on your cooking, do you ever singe your hand and you burn the hairs at the cooker and you smell it? Yes. That was the smell of singed singedness. Desert. So we're driving along, and this
Riders to the Sea.
Riders to the Sea and Riders to the Storm with Jim Morrison on.
The Playboy of the Western World.
So we're driving along, and then I said to the boys,
John Millington singe.
We could see nothing. We could see nothing for hours except desert. And then I said to the boys, I think there's something happening in front of us here. I can see these flashing lights way in the distance.
And are you driving?
I'm driving, and I can see that the heat coming up off the one asphalt tarmac thing. And as I said to Roscoe, and he was half asleep and Revan in the back asleep because I was on my driving duty, 3 hours on, 3 hours off. I said, boys, I think there's roadworks here in the middle of nowhere. So as we approached, saw the digger, saw a couple of lads, and they were shuddering cement. Seemingly there's a little bit of a flash flooding and they were fixing this bridge in the middle of nowhere. And I said, lads, I swear to God, Roscoe, roll that camera. Mar bachor gmech dinna keen sa jaw us air. And I guarantee there's somebody from Ireland here.
Can you imagine?
There's got to be somebody on construction. If this is a construction thing in the middle of nowhere, I bet you there's an Irish lad. I said to camera, we'll get a piece of TV out of this. That's the type of stuff we were doing. Hopping out of the car. Roscoe goes, ready. He hopped out. I go, Tommy, and shot. A lot of Wasik and shot. 3K kilometre. Oh, Alice Springs. Tommy, you gulla throw. Ayers Rock. It was fake. Tal chide togol. Ta construction a shul. Mastu willain air near shot. I bet you there's some Irish here. Went over. Two local guys, Aboriginal. How you doing, boys? How's it going? I said, what are you doing? Oh, we're fixing this. It's just mending this bridge. We're out here for about 3 weeks. We'll do it now in the dry season and then we'll head back. And then I said to the lad, is there any Irish here? He said, of course there is, mate, over there. Went over down the side, right? Went over down the side and there was an arse. He was down shuddering cement and I saw the top of his arse and I saw the crack of his arse.
Yes.
And he had a big Stetson on him and he's down. Cement shuddering in and I went, are you from Ireland? And he goes, how are you doing, boy? And this is in the middle of Australia. I said, where are you from? I'm from Westmeath. Give me a minute. Hang on a second there. So he fucking comes up then, right? And he goes, how are you, lads? And I'd say he's in his 40s, late 40s. Stetson on him, wiry, unshaven. Country accent, Westmead. And I says, oh, good, and we're shaking hands. What are you doing here, lads? Oh, I said, we're down here for 3 months. We're filming a show for TG4. Jesus Christ, what brings you here? Blah, blah, blah. Great chat. lovely man, Westmead. How long are you down here? I'm down here about 33 years, he said. 33 years in Australia and I love it. Never go home. I said, that's incredible. Lovely chat, got a photo and headed off. Just great to see another Irish brother in a remote part of the world.
Wow, man.
3 months later, I'm at the ploughing championships. My sons are like 5 and 6 years of age and they're into tractors. And there's a toy store at the ploughing championships that sells really good farm toy machinery, really good replicas, like really good tractors. So I was searching for that. And I walk by the Massey Ferguson stand and a lad comes out to me and he goes, Hector! Oh yeah, can we get a photo? No problem. It goes, Ollie. And he puts the arm around me. He's one of the reps for Massey Ferguson. I says, yeah. Do you want a t-shirt for the kids or something like that? I said, yeah, no problem. They love tractors. He says, come on in and get you something. And he says, get in the photo. He put the arm around me and he said, you made a woman very happy, Hector. You made an old woman very happy. I says, what do you mean? He says, you won't believe what I'm going to tell you. Come on in here for a second. We went into sort of the prefab where they sell the tractors. And he said, I'm going to tell you something now. You made a neighbour of mine, an old woman, very, very happy. And I says, what do you mean? He said, you remember you were down in Australia there a couple of months ago? We saw the show on T.G. Cahir. He says, I says, yeah. He says, you remember you were out in the middle of the desert? I said, I was, yeah. He says, you met a man from Westmead. I said, I did. We says, well, I'm next door neighbour to that family. And that mother hadn't seen her son in 33 years. And she thought he was dead a long, long time ago.
Oh, Jesus.
And the next thing she saw him on your show. And you made an old, old woman very, very happy. And I didn't know what to say. I just said, wow, what a fucking coincidence that could happen.
Wow.
Isn't that mad?
Yeah.
That man had never returned home. But what a great story.
You made
an old woman very, very happy.
Well, everybody, thank you very much for listening to this week's podcast. You've been listening to The Tommy and Hector Show with Loretta Blewett. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll see you next week.
Shukran. Salam alaikum.
Ta-ra.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.